In the following conference, Father John Hardin, S.J., speaks on the subject, Development of the Religious Life After First Profession. Father Hardin.
Before we get into this, let me note by way of introduction the various levels of formation, spiritual formation, which is now recognized in the Church and while always part of the Church's spiritual teaching on religious life, is more than ever important and even indispensable today to see where this particular formation fits in. There is first the formation before a person enters the religious life. And there had better be formation. Someone better do it. Some. But I suggest the minority are really formed well enough just from their home and environment for the religious life when they enter. That's why, as you know by now, I keep repeating and insisting communities in general and individual institutes should look to giving formation over a period of years, if need be, to people before they qualify for the religious life. Otherwise, you're going to be practicing all kinds of spiritual therapy. And the longer you keep them, the more doubts you will have, should they take their vows or not. I think there are many factors. One of the principal reasons for the massive exodus from religious communities in the United States, especially women's communities, has been here. Many people were just not equipped. And goodwill is no substitute for having what it takes. So that's the first formation. Second formation, prior to first vows, which in most institutes is the postulancy and novitiate. The formation document, I understand, is finished, but there were some faults in the translations. At any rate, it's being held up. I haven't seen the document, but I know in general what's in it. The second level of formation, therefore, is what has been technically called formation up to first vows. The third is the one we're addressing ourselves to now, between first vows and final vows. No less than that first formation to which I alluded earlier, so this third formation is now becoming a positive imperative. We can no longer trust that because a person has his or her first vows, therefore they can somehow be allowed to either drift for themselves or be able to take the give and take of religious life. Much more thought should be given. Constitutions, or at least directorates, should pay special attention to this third formation. And the fourth is after last vows. And this, the Second Vatican Council, provided for, spoke of continuing formation. no community can afford to be without these four kinds of formation, and I would say with special emphasis the fourth, because in general it affects the largest number of people. The religious in every community should be constantly affected by, influenced by, sound doctrinal ideas, opportunity for expressing to someone their problems, being able to cope with them, and being able to, for example, deal with the religious life, which, by the way, is not the same thing when you say celebrate your silver jubilee in a religious community. You run into difficulties and problems you never had before, not the least of which is age, habit, routine, sheer boredom. In any case, we are here talking about the third, you might say, stage of formation. I'm addressing myself to this in 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 3, 6, 9 areas. First, what is a special need of this third level of formation today? The first reason why I think there is a special need for this kind of formation today is the frequent lack of maturity of people before they enter religious life, which lack of maturity does not automatically change. They don't suddenly become mature just before, you might say, they've taken their first vows. Now, each case has to be studied on its own merits or demerits, but the lack of maturity, spiritual maturity, is, I think, particularly notable nowadays. Secondly, the postulancy and novitiate, although 3 years normally in most communities, is short. Moreover, in the nature of things, the postulancy and novitiate, although they do concentrate on the interior life of the postulant or novice, there's often enough work to do just to get the person to conform to externals, just to get along with others, to observe basic, you might say, rules of spiritual etiquette, to get up on time, retire on time, keep awake during meditation, and such basics. As a result, the interior life, I don't see as neglected, but does not have enough time to develop the interior virtues. I have found, both in dealing with villages and teaching those who direct villages, they are sometimes shocked within months of the first vow. Seems to be almost a kind of a breakdown. And they wonder why. Well, this says something about the nature of the second formation of postulancy and novitiate. But I think even with the best of efforts, the postulancy and novitiate must concentrate on the externals of the religious life, at least sufficiently to make sure this person is living very respectable religious life. Moreover, this may surprise you, but as only a priest, I think, would best know I look upon postancy and novitiate as a kind of courtship. And by and large, so most wives tell me, and husbands too, but mostly wives, I never knew what he really was until after we married. And I don't think it's just that marriage reveals things before they marry. They didn't know about each other. But frankly, when we are in courtship, or I like to say, in the postancy or novitiate, we are pretty much on our best behavior. The result is, with no intent to deceive, that once a person has his or her vows, they feel they've made it. And by that time, they know enough canon law to know that you can't just dismiss a person under vows because of some whim or sudden decision of the superior. So that's the second reason. The brevity of the period and the risk of the person's not being formed interiorly. And third, the secularized environment in which everyone lives nowadays. And I would say it's especially shocking or can be to a religious just after taking their first vows. In other words, having left a secularized environment on entering, in a way, they are re-entering that environment after first vows. And there's just nothing you can do about it because the culture in which we live is secular, and therefore a special need for coping with that environment during the years and its years of first profession. Before I go on, I would like to say something which, again, depending on the code of canon law, which none of us has seen, or the specifics, for example, on formation until the documentation is published. There has been some serious rethinking on the nature of temporary vows. And while I think they are remaining in religious life, even with a new code, there are many problems created, as I trust you agree, with the notion of temporary vows that somehow affect the thinking of those under vows of identifying their first vow status with a temporary commitment. At any rate, these are some of the special needs which need to be coped with by those who have their first vows but not yet finally professed. Second area of coverage, you're talking about the development of the religious life after first profession. There are two assumptions that should be able to be made by those who are in charge of this formation. The first assumption is that the person has the grace of a religious vocation and to this community. By the time of the first vows, whatever doubts may have been present before about the person's having the grace, any real positive doubt should no longer be there. Which, by the way, says something about the quality of the persons who are allowed to take their first vows. The Church's constant teaching has been already first profession should be given only to those who indicate with moral certitude. None of us has a revelation on the subject, but with what we call moral, which is prudential certitude, yes, this person has the grace to make it. And second assumption, now the person has the goodwill. The grace constitutes the vocation. The goodwill constitutes the commitment. Now, the first is perhaps a little more difficult to recognize because that's in the realm of the supernatural, the presence of grace. But the second, too, is not always as obvious as may seem, and that is why those in postulancy and the novitiate should be tried. Saint Ignatius used the term probation. Do you speak of your postulancy and novitiates as probation? That's where they should be. Probare, to try. In fact, that's what even temptation means. I don't mean you're supposed to go around tempting the novices to see if they're strong, but they should be prudent, but nevertheless conscious, testing. So things are not made easier for those in the novitiate. Guess what? They're supposed to be made what? Harder, more demanding. What a terrible mistake. You nurse them or baby them in the novitiate. They take their first vows, and they are in trouble. They better then have exposure to real life. And the kinder and more gentle the person in charge is, the harder they will find to do this. Some people do it naturally to test people. But generally, those people don't get into positions of authority to be in charge, see a formation. So those are the two assumptions. And I would say this. Work on the assumptions. Don't begin to suspect. Otherwise, if you're in charge of the formation of these on this level, you'll pass on your suspicion to the religious. Am I clear? Trust they have the grace. Assume they have the goodwill. You're not treating them as fully grown religious, but you are treating them as persons who have the grace of the religious life and have the basic willingness to live it. Watch your language. Because these people, in fact, people at the beginning of anything, tend to be most suspicious of themselves. The last thing they need is to be battered down. They make mistakes. People tend to be most critical of themselves, more than we are critical of them, and consequently do not encourage fears. Do I have a vocation? Can I make it? And there are temptations. There are temptations when a person first enters. There are temptations just before first vows, and there are in some people's lives their strongest temptations come after their first vows. Know this. I repeat, make those two assumptions and let your attitude towards the people be that you do trust. They have the grace, otherwise known as vocation. They have the goodwill, otherwise known as commitment. Third, this is a big one. what areas of development are called for. First, in general, when I speak of development of the religious life after first profession, I mean especially the interior development of the religious life. In other words, religious life as religious, things that have to do with God and the things of God, and we've talked about this I don't know how many times, but I really believe that before a person even enters the apostolate, give the person a chance to live on the premises for a while, if it's at all feasible, so that you can ferret out some problems that later on can go undercover and will be harder then to eradicate. I have 3-7 virtues especially to work on, those after first vows. First and most important, their faith. For the first time in my life, I gave a whole retreat over the Christmas holidays on faith. For 6 days, in New Mexico, to the Handmaids of the Precious Blood, and in order to be sure to cover the ground, I took the Apostles' Creed. All I know is faith and more faith. I dare say this is the most neglected virtue in the religious life. We kind of assume it. And we hardly know what to do with it, because with other virtues in the moral order, you can more easily cope with it. You know, when a person is lazy, the bell rings, they don't get up. No speculation there, the person is lazy or sick. Find out. Take their temperature. Take their pulse. If both are normal, they're lazy. But with faith, more difficult to recognize. Now, I won't dwell on how each is developed because I've got more parts to go, but just to emphasize first faith, remembering that faith is a virtue of the mind. Religious must continue in their doctrinal education during their what I call third formation. Good, sound spiritual reading. Good, down-to-earth conferences. Regular counsel. And I would say, be sure that the people in whose company they live will strengthen their faith and not weaken it. Second, patience. Patience, of course, means endurance of things that are painful. In many ways, apostancies and novitiates are removed from the real life. They almost have to be. The real life often opens up the first week or two after the first vows. It's one thing to learn about a thing from a lecture or a book, and other things to live it. Many aspects of that patience, but I would say especially the patience of community life. With rare exception, but by and large, in apostancies and novitiate, you are living with, I don't say totally appear persons who are on the same age or other level as yourself, but nevertheless, they are more, I would say, like one another than once you take your vows and you're, say, on a mission. You're dealing with seculars. You're dealing with the outside world. Depending on the apostate, you may deal with some very difficult problems, temptations that were never expected. Third, stability. Stability is a virtue. It is a combination of patience, faith, constancy, and especially courage. I've dealt with too many people after their first vows not to know that after the first flush of religious life kind of wears off, the honeymoon is over, they begin to wonder whether they've got a vocation. Stability. Fourth, humility, especially if they find themselves suddenly successful. And there are such things. Whatever the apostate happens to be, often after their first vows, religious, they say, "This is wonderful. I was just happy beyond description. Worked like a dog as a scholastic, but I was very happy. Fortunately, and this is good to hear, St. Ignatius provided that after the first vows, which for us are, as I think I told you, perpetual from the beginning, he does not allow any people with their first vows for 2 years to be engaged in the active apostolate. How's that? And in my case, and this was normal then, it was 5 years. Now, given the need for studies, we just went into a study situation. At any rate, humility, especially as I say, if the person seems to succeed in whatever work they're engaged in, maybe they are fully equipped for what they're doing and wouldn't have to be religious to say be a good teacher or whatever, but to make sure that humility is cultivated, and I would further say to watch it, and not so far from helping the person to cultivate humility, actually encourage their self-complacency, because they're liable to mistake, because they're succeeding in the apostolate, therefore they're succeeding as religious. Not so. Not so. Fifth, trust. Trust in God. This is the opposite. If they seem to be a failure, in other words, if they tend to succeed, and they may well, at least externally, and they can taste success almost instantly, they may find that the apostolic life is just more than they bargained for. Then they must cultivate the spirit of trust in God and keep telling him, "Lord, you who call me to this kind of life, I trust you will give me the grace to maintain it." Six. And here is the big one. Firmness. In spite of bad example, I think, in my estimation, the single greatest trial in young religious with their first vows is the bad example of other religious who have their final vows.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.